Welcome to Around the Ozarks, a public affairs program brought to you by your local Midwest Family Broadcasting Station. Here's your host, Scott Meyer.
And good morning and welcome again to Around the Ozarks. I'm your host, Scott Meyer, the general manager here at the Midwest Family Stations. As we try to do each and every week on Around the Ozarks, bring folks of interest to you, the listener. And every time we have a show, sometimes we deal with everyone from local entrepreneurs, business owners. Sometimes we've had some clergy in. Try to stay away from politicians whenever we can. Authors, we've had a few authors. And actually, Jay, we had a fun one the other day. We had a fellow that stands on stage to get people excited about going to work every day. And he did a great job. You probably have already heard that show. And if you haven't, you'll have to go listen to the podcast. But what we've done this morning is one of those times we can actually feature someone who I believe has been an author, but also considers her next step in life to be a publisher, because writing and reading, editing is a passion for you, right? My guest this morning is Angela Hamadeni. Good morning, Angela.
Good morning, Scott.
How are you? Is that fair to say? Are those three things really important to you?
Oh, absolutely. I've always wanted to be a writer since I was 13 years old.
Now, Angela, interestingly enough, also works here at the radio stations because she's one of our account executives, but went on to do something that she's always wanted to do about a year and a half ago. It was pre-pandemic, was it not?
I started writing pre-pandemic, yes. And so I finished up my thriller, and that should come out here in the next month or so.
But you're wanting to be an entrepreneur, and,
yes.
And even though you still had, for all intents and purposes, a day job, mm-hmm. you really wanted to start this publishing company.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. What's the name of it?
It's called Pages and Pie Publishing.
And where does that come from? Where does Pages and Pie come from?
Well, there is a step two to this business. We'll go into that on a different day. But
okay.
Pages and Pie Publishing is, we are very passionate about telling stories. We think everybody has a story out there. And right now, especially, we want to publish those stories that are inspiring, motivating, or entertaining. We think just with the state of affairs out there that people need those things right now, especially.
Well, let's take a step back. My guest this morning, Angela Hamadeni. Angela, owner of a new publishing firm called Pages and Pie, as well as an account executive here at Midwest Family. You are from the area?
Yes.
And have a family?
Yes.
How many kids?
I have two kids.
Okay. And these are going to be really short answers. You're a writer. You should be able to go on and on and on.
Okay. I have a 16-year-old.
Okay.
And I have my son just turned 13 on Sunday. So I have two teenagers, full-time mom, full-time business owner, part-time at the station, just really busy.
But when all this happened, Angela, well, I don't want to get ahead of myself. So being from this area, you went to school here?
Yes.
Okay, where? High school where?
Pleasant Hope,
okay.
Actually.
All right.
North
and then went on and got a bachelor's?
Yes, yes. So my passion is writing. So mm-hmm. I have a professional writing degree with a minor in creative. I would have majored in creative, but back then we sort of thought that you couldn't really make a living with a creative writing degree. And so I flipped it to professional writing. And really, the two have come together nicely in my career, writing campaigns for business owners and now writing fiction and working with this business. So,
well, I know in conversations you and I have had before, it always has been a great passion for you. And I kid about writing the book that nobody will ever read about our industry. And actually, I'm probably getting close to starting that book that nobody will ever read. But I've always been intrigued about you. You know, I mean, that's you've had a full-time career up till now, mm-hmm. Not only in sales and working with customers, but as a mother, as a wife, as a homeowner. I mean, there's a lot going on in your world. And one day you have this eureka moment where I'm guessing you had that conversation with your husband and said, I think I'm just going to put the brakes on a little bit and start a publishing company.
Yeah. So I know that we probably are getting a little ways away from talking about the pandemic, but really at that point that the world shut down and I'm sitting at my table in the kitchen working from home like everybody else was, I had this really clear introspective moment where I thought, you know, if this is the end of the world, am I really doing what I want to be doing? And I love my job, loved it then too. But I thought the answer really wasn't no. I wasn't doing what I was 100% passionate about, and that was writing. And so it changed everything for me.
Angela Hemmen Denning, my guest this morning on Around the Ozarks. She, the owner of Pages and Pie Publishing. People think about publishing. They think, William & Schuster, Random House. I mean, you think of all these huge publishing editorial companies, mm-hmm. and along comes Pages and Pie. How many are there of you? Are there a lot of small publishing firms out there that look for, and do you look for writers, or do they find you?
No, I very much go out and look for writers. And so there are a lot of smaller publishing companies mm-hmm. spread across the United States. You're right. There's the big five in New York, the traditional publishers. But I think we little guys tend to specialize in one area or one genre or another. For us, we're really just looking for those inspirational, motivational, or entertaining stories. They can be fiction or nonfiction. And that would seem to cover a lot of genres, but we're pretty specific about what we'll take and what we won't.
So you've also got, being a publisher, the added responsibility of editing.
Yes.
And editing, I can only imagine, you know, you're dealing with artists, uh-huh. right? Artists like to see their perspective in everything they do, and along comes your firm, and you say, mm-hmm. well, you know, about 95% of what you've written is great, mm-hmm. but there's 5% that we have to change. Have you been involved in that yet, and what's that conversation like?
Oh, my goodness. No, you're so right. When you're dealing with authors, it's a whole different mindset. So, because they're artists, mm-hmm. and in essence, when you start editing their work, it's almost like calling their baby ugly at times. We are very specific about our editing. We do a developmental edit, a copy edit, and a proof edit. So at any point in those three edits, we're going to do a lot of slashing, a lot of red on the paper, a lot of changes. Sometimes we're filling in plot holes to stories. It's pretty difficult. And then we have to go back to the author and say, hey, here are the changes we made, and this is why. Having a good relationship on the front end with that author helps them understand we are only trying to make their story better, mm-hmm. and that has helped.
So if we took a perspective from this is today, what would 3 years from today look like? What would it look like?
Well, my plan is that I have a physical location, and I have, gosh, I don't know, a staff of maybe 25. With, you know, a manager over every single editing, every different edit. So a developmental manager, a copy edit manager, proof edit manager. I really, really love and want to work with interns at the different colleges. We have some really strong professional and creative writing programs. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the opportunity to have a I didn't get the experience of a actual true writing internship. And so I want to give that to those students and give them some real world experience. And then whether they then become a full-time employee with Pages and Pie Publishing or they go out and they go into the world doing that, mm-hmm. that's kind of my goal.
So you've had a chance to meet some novelists.
I have.
Beyond yourself.
Yes.
Okay. And how's that going?
Very well. Very well. It's always surprising to me that even though I talk to somebody who is incredibly talented, there's always further to go. So I can always challenge somebody to be even better than they currently are. Mm-hmm. And that's been fun to discover. And a lot of times I'm learning from them. I get to learn what they know that I don't know. So,
who are some of your favorite authors?
Some of my favorites, Dean Koontz, Mary Higgins Clark. I have been reading a lot of the local guys here. Shirley McCann, she's local. She writes the Scary Inn books. Ben Reeder has a really great series out called The Demon's Apprentice. I'm pretty eclectic. Sometimes I listen to nonfiction. So, I pretty much will read and I do a lot of listening on audiobooks. I know, shame on me, but it's pretty eclectic what I listen to and what I read.
There was a chicken and egg theory I read the other day about audiobooks. You know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Is reading a book the same as listening to a book?
I would almost say that depends on your learning style. So interestingly enough, I think there's a difference. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think there's just a smidge that's lost in translation with the audiobook. But I am an auditory learner, and so I get a lot out of it. And I retain what I hear. So I think it depends.
My guest this morning, Angela Hammond-Denny. Angela is the – what is your title? I mean, what do you want to call yourself there? Grand Poobah? Are you the CEO?
I would say owner, editor, writer, rewriter.
Chief cook and bottle washer at this point.
Yeah.
Well, we're 3 years away from having the 25-person staff. But because it's such a competitive environment and because the internet out there allows – writers, not just from this area, but anywhere, really, to be able to contact you or for you to be able to reach out to them. How much of that do you see happening? Are you really focused just on the Ozarks, or are you thinking, heck, if I find an author in upstate Maine, maybe that's somebody I can sign and we can do some work together?
Well, oddly enough, about half of the writers I've worked with so far have not been from Missouri. So I had the crime thriller that we're working on right now. He reached out to me. He lives in California.
Really?
He was a police chief in California, and he saw one of my videos that I boosted from Instagram. So you never know, really, even though my passion is really to grow locally and to be a local business and to tie in with local, I'm still working with anybody who comes to me.
How would they find you unless they're actively involved in Instagram? How do they get a hold of you to say, hey, would you look at my work?
They need to go to my website, which is pagesandpiepublishing.com, and there is a contact page there. I get a lot of people who will fill out that info. It shoots straight over to my email, and I get in touch with them really quickly. I have social medias on Facebook and on Instagram. We do a little bit of radio, here locally, but word of mouth. I've had a lot of people who have brought people to me.
Now, do you go to bed at night thinking, I wish I'd have done this 20 years ago? Or do you go to bed at night thinking, I'm so glad I'm in it now?
I'm not big on regret, so no, I don't regret that I didn't start earlier. I think that all of the things that have happened in my career and in my life personally have sort of brought me to this point at this moment. I don't think I could have done this any sooner.
And at the end of the year, you'll have published, what do you think? How many books?
Well, we're at about 5 right now, so my goal was to hit 10. Right now, we're a little two-person company, and so I think that's a pretty big accomplishment, especially when you're working on 300-page thrillers.
Do you have to read every page of every transcript script that comes to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I probably read it by the time it's done 5 or 6 times.
No kidding.
So, yeah, by the time we go through every single edit – yeah, because we make changes, and then we go through a fresh copy, and then we go through it again. And
before we run out of time here, I'm really interested. Do you hear a voice in the writing style of everybody differently? And how difficult is that? Because words are simply words; they'd be easy to put together and just have one tonality. Mm-hmm. But when someone's writing, everybody must have a thumbprint that goes on what they've written.
Yeah, I do. I hear something unique in all of the different books that we work on. So especially the nonfiction pieces, if a writer does their job really well, then you can hear their inner voice. And you almost feel like you're having a conversation with or listening to that person when you know them in person. So it's interesting. And then the fiction writers, they have a consistency of – again, there's a unique voice there. It may not be their personal speaking voice, but they've tapped into something that is special and unique.
Angela Hammond-Denny, this is a pretty interesting topic. Would you come back after you do your 10th?
Absolutely.
And we can talk again?
Yeah.
Excellent. And again, if you want to get a hold of Angela, the best way is to do what?
To look at my website, pagesandpiepublishing.com, and just fill out a contact.
Excellent. Angela Hammond-Denny, my guest on the first half of Around the Ozark, she of Pages and Pie Publishing, and good luck to you. It's very exciting.
Thank you.
We'll be back in just a moment with the other half of Around the Ozarks. You're listening to the Midwest Family Broadcast Stations.
Since the moment you were born, I've made 1,000 wishes that no matter what you do in this life, you keep doing. Inspire kids to do at 4-H.org.
And welcome back to the second half of this morning's Around the Ozark show. I'm your host, Scott Meyer, the general manager here at the Midwest Family Stations. And our second half guest is here to actually raise an old issue, but explain it better. And who better to explain it than the chief of police here in Springfield than my good friend, Chief Paul Williams.
Hi, Scott.
Chief, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
And you look good. And I love it when you come in your full regalia because you just it looks great.
Well, thanks. You know, it's, I love putting the uniform on. That's why we do what we do. So putting the uniform on with a badge and a gun and being able to respond to anything,
as
anywhere,
long, as
anytime.
As long as you're not looking at me through the window of my car.
No,
and
not at all.
For my license and registration. Which, by the way, if I was doing something wrong, Paul, I can't think of anybody I'd rather have do it than you.
Well, I'll keep that in mind.
You do that.
I know what you drive.
That along with you and I. Yes, you do. You and I someday deer hunting together. It came to our attention last week that Community Partnership of the Ozarks was awarded a grant. And the grant is about something that actually was enacted in 2017. Can you guide a little light on? I saw a video of you in 2017 promoting this, and by golly, your hair was a little darker,
so
but
actually,
you still look pretty good.
I appreciate that, but that video was filmed in November
of this
of
year,
2020.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Were you using a little product then? I mean,
I guess the lighting was such, and it was no shave November, so
that's right. You had a beard.
I had a beard.
I'm about to go on vacation, so this very bad attempt at a beard is my attempt. So,
but what you saw was a opportunity to shed a light on something that's been around for a couple of years, mm-hmm. but I don't think a lot of people knew about it. So substance abuse in our community is a huge issue. And in the police department, we're all about connecting people to services and getting them treatment and not necessarily taking people to jail. That's
sure.
not the proper way to deal with someone who's experienced a crisis, certainly in the instance of a drug overdose. So in 2017, the legislature actually passed a law giving people immunity from prosecution or being arrested if they were with someone who experienced a drug overdose or an alcohol overdose and required medical attention. They want people to call mm-hmm. and say, get that person help. Because believe it or not, we've had instances where people have not done that and it's been fatal.
So is this where you maybe see somebody walking down the street in a funny way, or is this?
No, this is where you're. I'll just use a good example. Man, you're in your house, you're having a party, and, mm-hmm. and somebody takes something they're not supposed to, or takes something that's laced with something they weren't aware of.
Oh, okay.
And all of a sudden they're on the floor, and you're going, oh my God, what do I do? And you should call 911,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, we have people who use illegal drugs, and are afraid of calling because they know the police might come.
Sure.
They don't want to get arrested. They're less concerned about their friend than they are about their own well-being. And so this statute gives you immunity from that. So it goes, we will look the other way
mm-hmm.
when we get there to make sure that we get medical treatment. This person who needs the treatment, who is overdosed, gets the help they need rather than you just ignoring them. And we won't look around and arrest you for what you have in your possession, or if you guys were using illegal narcotics or mm-hmm. drinking too much, or it was underage drinking, whatever it might be, we're gonna look the other way. It's more important to get the help that person needs and make sure that they survive, and then moves on instead of you ignoring it and being more concerned about that. So it's called the Good Samaritan Law.
Mm-hmm. So that's been around for 4 years now.
Yes, 2017.
Okay. And being head of the department, what's your experience been like? Do you see an uptick of people actually calling for help, or has it been the other way?
Yes, I think I don't know that I can't put a number to this and say mm-hmm. because of this law that's happened, but I know I want to say off the top of my head, we had about 90 overdoses that we responded to and investigated last year. And the percentage of those that became fatal has lessened. I hope it is because people are calling in and going, mm-hmm. I want to get help from my friend. I can also think of a couple instances where that didn't happen. And whether either in the city or in the county or nearby that the police had to investigate a homicide. Medical examiner had to come because someone died from an overdose.
Sure.
And we found out that, well, they were with other people who should have called and didn't. So those kind of situations are what we're trying to avoid. I think the grant the CBO got was to shine more light on it.
Sure.
Not something new, but something that people maybe weren't aware of. Had a huge increase in heroin overdoses over the last couple of years. And the inclusion of fentanyl in that where people maybe don't know has created a higher propensity that someone's going to overdose and need some medical assistance. So anything we can do to shine a light on that and say, man, take care of people. Don't worry about what's going to happen to you. And the state's passed a law saying we won't arrest you if we get there and see you're doing something wrong.
Springfield Chief of Police Paul Williams with me this morning on Around the Ozarks, and we're talking about the SAM. Is it the SAM Act? The SAM law? Or
yeah, so that's,
is it not even called the
it's
SAM?
It's referred to as the Good Samaritan Law, but it's actually titled Immunity from Liability for Seeking or Obtaining Medical Assistance for a drug overdose.
Sure. Boy, yeah. How are you doing these days on filling openings?
So, yeah, what a change of gears here, man.
Downshifted
and put us in reverse, man.
I'm going to throw you another one here in a minute.
It has nothing to do with the drug question,
well,
all right,
it does.
At all.
I mean, if the drug problem is still out there and it sounds like it is growing a little bit, I mean, it's going to take men and women to assist.
Yeah, but thank you for bringing that up. I have 38 vacancies right now. And
38?
Yeah, which is a little over 10% of my workforce.
Okay.
Haven't had that many in a long time. In fact, 2 years ago, 2019, we had 30 vacancies and I actually hired 33 people, filled an academy class and hired 3 alternates.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have 38. I have a class of 8 people. The number of applicants, people interested in law enforcement, has decreased around the country, and we weathered that storm for a few years.
Gee, I can't imagine why, Paul.
I know, but in the last year, as you know, there's national events that have trickled down to Springfield. So we had less than 50% of the applicants than we'd had any year in the last decade last year. So if you don't have the people coming in the door, mm-hmm. then you don't have people surviving the testing process and getting in the academy. So it's a concern. We've had to pull back from some things that we do, reorganize, mm-hmm. and there's just less officers available. You know, I'm supposed to have 368, and I've got 330.
Wow.
So that's a concern. And I don't see that turning around this year. You know, I'm an optimist. I think within mm-hmm. a couple of years, things are cyclical. You know, we started testing for the next academy class in January, and we've seen more people tested for the academy last month than had in any of the previous 5 months. So maybe that's turning around and people are coming back to, it's a great job. It's a wonderful profession. It's honorable.
Sure.
You should be proud to be in it. And people here in this community absolutely love, honor, support, and respect law enforcement. So it's a good place to be a cop if you want to be one.
So you wanted a curve. Here's a real curveball. Well, since it's baseball season and we have the Cardinals now. One of my favorite people in the world and somebody who I'd love to, I will at some point, but I worked alongside him in Detroit but never had a chance to meet him, is Chief of Detroit Police, James Craig. Mm-hmm. And recently he's come out and is talking about running for governor as a Republican, and he's a person of color mm-hmm. In a city that's about 90% African-American. But he's come out and is talking very seriously about leaving the police job and right. going for the governor's chair. What about you here in Missouri?
I know Chief Craig, and I grew up in Detroit, as mm-hmm. you know, and I still have family and friends there, and so I keep up. So I actually heard that. That's a significant jump and difference in job moving from an appointed chief's position to mm-hmm. any type of elected position, but that's a big jump. I wish him well. I think he would do well if in that position. I've you know, watched him from afar, if you will, and appreciate what he's done in my hometown to kind of turn things around. Sure. But me, I'm the chief of police. I love being the chief of police.
So you're not putting together a committee to
absolutely
investigate
not.
The
no,
opportunity?
No, no. Governor Parson's doing a good job, and Mayor McClure is doing even better here locally, and I love working with people like that, but I have no desire to do anything.
Now,
like
you're a number of years my junior, but how long do you see yourself doing doing this?
A number of years. I'm not. Let's not put a number on
that
it.
That was favorable. No, I didn't.
I don't. I will not put an expiration date on my career or an end date. I tell people I'll do this as long as I still love coming to work every day. Yeah. It's been the most trying year of my career, the last year.
I can only imagine.
Local events and then everything nationally and then things going on in the city and with the department. It is a struggle. And I see people all over the country stepping away from this profession. And my point is, as a leader, when things are bad or when you really need to step up and lead and be engaged and be involved. And mm-hmm. so even if I was thinking of leaving, and I'm not, I would not leave during a time of crisis. I'd want to right the ship and make sure that things were on an even keel before we move forward. So having said that, no, I don't have any plans to retire. Reaching in July, it will be 11 years I've been here as the chief.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be my 40th anniversary in law enforcement. Which seems like a long time.
No, it is a long time.
But I did start when I was 20, 21 years old. So I've got a lot of working years left, and I love what we do here in Springfield, and I want to continue to be a part of it. So
you're hearing Chief of Police Paul Williams, and this is Around the Ozarks and the Midwest Stations. Well, that I'm glad we got that off the table because I really wanted to find.
Never
out
know
what your
where this conversation
are.
Is going to go with you,
well,
Scott.
It's a chance for us to peel back the onion a little bit, and I don't want to go too deep into this either, but just your thoughts on. What's the mindset of your staff these days with all the things that have been in the news?
You know, I call it the negative narrative around the profession, mm-hmm. around the country, really tries on people and weighs on them. And it's a daily barrage of things that don't happen here, but happen elsewhere. But unfortunately, with the advent of social media, it's in everybody's hand. Mm-hmm. It's not just on your TV and in your living room. You can't turn it off. It's in your hand and you're looking at it and you're paying attention to it and you're hearing it and people are asking about it. You try to balance that with, as I said before, the great community we have. I mean, I first time I've been in uniform in a couple months because I had surgery and I wasn't able to.
Mm-hmm.
But I went out today, had lunch, and I got stopped by three people at lunch. One that wanted to buy my lunch, and mm-hmm. I was already eating. And two, not knowing I was a chief, just saying, "Officer, thank you for your service. We love you guys here." So that helps. But then you couple that with my workforce that is still grieving. You know, we lost an officer last year, Chris right. Walsh, first time in 80 years that mm-hmm. In line of duty. And that is traumatic enough. And then on top of that, Officer Mark Preby was paralyzed and life altered forever right out in front of the police station.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add to that the other things that have happened. You know, Josiah Overton was shot and injured the same day Chris was killed. And he's come back to work. You know, and which is an inspiration to each and every one of us. But I think people are still grieving with those two things that happen, you know, within a couple months of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, all the national protests and the things that people have done other places and some very egregious things that cast a negative light on what we do and trying to remind people that, you know, we don't do that. We wouldn't allow that. We would seek to prevent that.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything were like that to happen, you know, we would correct that immediately. And not just me, but all 330 officers that I have right now.
We are almost entirely out of time. I did want to ask you one last question with a one-word response, if I can get it from you.
We'll see.
I'm familiar with what you were trying to get for the city, which is the system that can hear a gunshot. So you can respond to the system letting you know that. I know that was a pet project of yours, and it was voted down.
Disappointed.
Okay. My guest this morning has been Chief Paul Williams, Chief of Springfield Police. And Paul, as always, love having you here. Love having you, Chief. And you're a good friend of the radio stations, and we appreciate you very much.
I appreciate everything you guys do supporting us as well.
Thank you. Scott. If you happen to miss any or of all of this morning's program, you can always hear it in its entirety on our website. Go to MidwestFamilySpringfield.com. Click on the ATO tab for Around the Ozarks at the top of the page, and you can hear this show along with all the shows that come before it this last year. I want to thank my guest again, Chief Paul Williams. I want to thank my producer, Jay, because he is Jay, and all of you for listening in this morning. On behalf of all of us at Midwest Family Stations, have a great Sunday morning. We'll be back with you again next week.
Thank you for joining us for Around the Ozarks, a public affairs program brought to you by your local Midwest Family Broadcasting Station. Listen again next Sunday morning at 6 a.m.